we're all a bit shell-shocked at what happened in Washington yesterday. I'm going to go right to you, Jill, and give us a sense. You know, you write about this stuff. What happened in Washington? How did you see the riot on the Capitol come down? Because that's what Wolf Blitzer called it. He called it a riot.
Well, it was an insurrection, technically. It was a riot, but it was truly an insurrection. And I've seen this for many years because it's been fomenting since the Reagan times, the division between government and the people. And this is just sort of a logical ending to 40 years of corporations trying to take over our government, the oligarchs taking over our government, and they completely own one party, which is the Republican Party, and they don't, they're not interested in what people have to do. And now a lot of people need, and a lot of people are very mad, and they've been told to be mad, and they've been told to be victimized, and there's been 20 years of Fox News making them feel like that somebody else is getting what they should have. And then Trump comes along and talks about American carnage and it's those Muslims, it's other people, and strikes fear. And this is just, I'm still shell-shocked myself, but it is not unexpected after so many years of fomenting. And I feel very sad for the people that actually marched down the street. I'm angry. I'm still trying to cope with my outrage at what they did. But I also know that their brains are broken. They have been told lies as truth. And they're in a totally different reality. And it's very hard to get through to them.
Thank you. I want to go to Stephen Zunis. Professor from University of San Francisco, Professor Zunis, is that the way you saw it? Did you see an insurrection on your TV set, or did you see something else?
Good. First of all, Chris, you're echoing quite a bit. I don't know if you've noticed that or not, but I can understand you. But it sounds like you're in a cave or something. But anyway,
thank you. We're going to get our engineer to get on that.
Yeah, putting the audio the more important question before us. So yeah, I mean it was an insurrection in the sense that these are people who are trying to. Overturn a process in government, essentially to stop the certification of a democratic election, essentially trying to seize power by force. I mean, by certain definitions, you could even call it an attempted coup. And it's quite serious because, I mean, I'm someone who, of course, has been quite willing to criticize the Democratic Party on any number of things in terms of their kilt. A tilt towards neoliberalism and corporate interest and of course on foreign policy in terms of human rights, international law. But let's look at the basic facts. As disappointing as Democrats are in some areas, at least they believe in democracy. You cannot say that about the Republican Party anymore, or at least a significant segment of it. The conservative movement in this country at least a significant faction of the conservative movement in the United States has become explicitly anti-democratic. And while yesterday's events will likely backfire politically, it serves as a warning that there are real authoritarian tendencies in this country led by people who are willing to use violence to seize power.
Okay. Jill Cody, thank you, Stephen Zunis. Jill Cody, how organized was this insurrection? I mean, doesn't an insurrection, to call it an insurrection, have to be sort of like an organized force behind it? Do you know of any organized forces that led to this insurrection?
Yes, it was very organized because at the same time, there were state capitals around the country that were being attacked as well. Utah, Austin, Texas, even Sacramento, California, Kansas. They were also being approached by insurrectionists. So not only was it organized, and of course, Donald Trump has been talking about it for weeks after the election, and even put out a tweet saying it's going to be wild on the 6th. I mean, they have been using their Parler as one platform. They have been using their Facebook and other communication channels so that they knew about the rally. They had a call for people to come, and only one person yesterday that I heard was arrested from Washington, D.C. Other than that, they were from Florida, California, Texas, all around the country. And then state capitals were also approached at the same time. So it was clearly well organized.
Okay, I want to get Sam Farr in here. Sam Farr is a retired Congress member who represented Santa Cruz and Monterey counties in the House of Representatives from 1993 to 2003. Welcome, Sam.
Thank you very much. No, it was 2003.
It's 2017. Excuse me. Okay, excuse me, sir. Hey, I was with you. One of the best days I ever spent was with you in the House watching you do what you did for all those years. And how proud you were looking down. You were with me in the gallery up above the House floor, and you just beamed a certain kind of like, this is where I belong. This is an incredible place. Can you take us through some of your thoughts yesterday? How did you feel when you saw this real violation of the space in the House of Representatives?
It was like somebody trying to destroy the Sistine Chapel. It's just was so ugly, so vile, so sickening, made me so angry. Because the Capitol is owned by the people. All the people of this country own that building. And I've been very critical of even the Capitol Police for trying to make it more and more secure that the visitors can't petition their government. I mean, that's the one building in all of the world that essentially historically been open. Anybody could walk in until the officers were shot a few years ago. They didn't have any metal detectors. They didn't have any security at the door. And obviously we need to do that. But I think that I've been very critical of not overdoing it. And so to see people violate the trust that we've given to the people of America, that this is your building, and walk in and understand how Congress, how your government is working, and have access to your elected officials by going to their office, and seeing all that just torn away was just sickening. And I think I am just appalled at those, mainly all white people just going in there and destroying, because what the reaction is going to be is to tighten all that up. And then when you tighten it up, it makes it less accessible and all those other things. My reaction is, you know, everybody who was there storming the Capitol, those are our neighbors. They came, as someone just said, they came from all over the United States, from different places. They came from our neighborhood. And how did they get there? The one common denominator that could penalize all of them is put them all on the no-fly list.
Former Representative Sam Farr, you brought up a great point just now. Basically, white people coming in, and in a previous segment that I just finished, one of the journalists was contending that if it was a Black Lives Matter rally and they took the Capitol, they would have been shot. The Capitol Police. What happened? Why weren't they a bit more aggressive in repelling the insurrectionists?
Well, two things. One, lousy intel. Somehow trusting that if you had a rally of white people that they wouldn't do things like this. Washington knows how to handle protests better than any city in the United States, and they do it. They accommodate the protests. They invite them. That's a way of petitioning your government. But you do it lawfully. You don't do it unlawfully. And so the intel was totally blown on this, and there's got to be accountability for that. And second, I blame the Capitol Police Force because they build up their own, they have almost 2,000 officers, and their only job is to guard the Capitol. We around them, there are 24 police agencies in the Washington, D.C., in the district, like the Park Police, the guard the mall, the White House Police. They're all different police forces that guard the White House, the Metropolitan Police Force. So what they lacked when I was there is that they refused to sign mutual aid agreements where others would respond when they needed it, because they just said, well, they can't come here fast enough, so we have to do it all ourselves. So they blew it on doing it all themselves, and I think they had the capacity to do it. They certainly didn't use it very effectively. But you have to really go back to what caused it all, and that's the people that incited the riot in the first place, and that's the President of the United States. That's 100 Republican congressmen who should not be reelected because of their refusal to accept the fact that we had a fair election in the United States, and the U.S. senators that did the same. I mean, it's appalling that we see that the insurgents in this country are some of our elected officials.
Professor Stephen Zunis from the University of San Francisco, would you agree that white people were treated differently yesterday, and that if they were Black Lives Matter protesters, demonstrators, insurrectionists who attacked the Capitol, they would have been treated differently?
Oh, certainly. I mean, there are clear signs that there could be a serious attempt to storm the Capitol. But despite that, the Capitol police, the presence was minimal. They were quickly overrun. And again, this contrasts with the massive and intimidating troop presence around the Capitol and other government buildings during the largely nonviolent protests for racial justice this past spring. And despite the absence of any realistic threat. Now I've been to a fair number of demonstrations in Washington. I've seen more troop presence and security for these peaceful anti-war demonstrations and environmental protests. I mean, the contrast is amazing, and it does raise serious questions regarding racism and ideological biases and policies related to security measures in Washington, especially since the Capitol Police is certainly apparently made some mistakes, but why weren't there National Guard? Why weren't there other security presence there, given the size of the group and given the threats and given the fact that many of these people were armed? There's some indication that perhaps the Pentagon initially refused requests around having National Guard, because unlike in the states, the local government can't call out the National Guard. It has to go through the Department of Defense. And in fact, this is renewed calls for D.C. statehood, actually, given their inability to protect people. But it raises questions beyond just the Capitol Police.
Joe Cody, you wrote a book called America Abandoned. Could you sort of take us through the lens of that book and look at what happened yesterday? And Representative Farr talks about the intel wasn't there, and the Capitol Police were overwhelmed. What's your thoughts?
Well, my book is America Abandoned, the Secret Velvet Coup That Cost Us Our Democracy. And as I was mentioning earlier, I have seen a velvet coup in this country since Reagan's presidency. And there are certain benchmark points that have happened that have slowly brought on the separation of people and their government, the empowerment of corporations to the point where, they were given personhood. We had Citizens United, Stephen knows, but where billionaires were given the ability to spend as much money as they want on campaigns. So there has been a march for 40 years, 45 years, to arrive to this point today. Some destructions of laws, some Supreme Court decisions, and some right-wing think tanks, that sort of thing. So to me, it is to come, and then Trump just comes right in where one of the Republicans, I'm trying to remember his name, said all we need is somebody that can hold a pen. Well, that's exactly who Trump was. And so they've been deconstructing the government from the inside out, because what is the largest or the strongest compensating force to a corporation the size of the Koch brothers or Facebook or other huge companies? And that would be the government, not the individual. So
okay, I'm going to take a quick station.
Go ahead.
Identify ourselves. This is KSQD Santa Cruz 90.7. We're speaking with Stephen Zunis, professor of politics from the University of San Francisco, Sam Farr, retired Congress member who represented Santa Cruz and Monterey counties, and author Jill Cody. Representative Sam Farr, I'm going to ask you, where do you put this, what happened yesterday, on sort of a historical index of U.S. events that have happened in the 20th and 21st centuries?
Well, I think it's the ability of the internet and others to promote fear, and for our government to make a lot of money for a lot of people because we hire a lot of private sector and buy a lot of equipment. I mean, the fear factor is probably the most effective growth industry in the world. And I think the only way we're going to stop this is, I've always believed that Gandhi's statement of be the solution that you want to see. And I think, and that's my old Peace Corps idea, that it really is people to people. And what we should do here is start at the local level, because all democracy, nobody who's in the White House or in the Congress lives in Washington. They don't come from that. They come from all over the country. I mean, I flew back every week for 24 years. So we're all from a hometown, and what we have to do is begin rebuilding this country. And I think, and Biden certainly will be part of it, supporting this, is that we've got to start listening to our neighbors. It's our neighbors who were climbing those fences yesterday, and we don't like them, so we just blame, put them in categories, give them titles, and blame it. That isn't going to stop it. It's going to stop when people can sit down and talk to each other and be a little bit rational. I mean, those people that believe in all these conspiracy theories on the left and on the right have got to realize that they've got to base those things on facts. The fact isn't there. So we have to listen to each other, first of all, and begin understanding what motivates people to be in such disbelief. Because, frankly, the wonderful thing, I mean, having lived in another country as a Peace Corps volunteer, is wondering the incredible respect for law in America, that people stop at red lights and stop signs, and they respect our elected officials. And it's just a wonderful culture of our democracy that's unlike anything, and the most giving society on the planet, and our way we give of our time and our money. There's no other culture in the world that does that. But somehow we've become too introvert. And I think that this COVID virus certainly made us all introverts, and there's been some positive things that have happened to that on top of all the negative deaths and everything. But I think that the Biden administration has got to make this country a country of extroverts who start listening to others, talking to people that we don't normally talk to, and begin building an understanding that a community is based on the sum total of its parts. It takes a village to solve a problem, to raise a child, to have a wonderful lifestyle, and we need to rebuild our villages, village by village, all over the country.
Sam Farr, two questions. You lived in Colombia during your Peace Corps years. My first question is, did you ever see anything like what we all witnessed on our TV sets and our computers yesterday in Washington, D.C.? And second question is, how is the world going to look at what America did yesterday? Or well, some people in America.
I was introduced to demonstrations in Latin America, in Bogota, and when people were students mostly who were petitioning the fact that they had to do homework and things like that. I mean, some stuff that I thought was pretty silly. But nonetheless, they were riots that were breaking and damage. I mean, I had never seen that here. And yesterday it was so shameful as the world watched this. As I said, it's kind of like if you saw people going in and trying to destroy the Sistine Chapel. I mean, the world, regardless of religion, would just not want to see a sacred place like that destroyed. And they saw that this country that has been so proud of its peaceful governance, its peaceful transfer of power, erupting into a third world country. Unbelievable that could happen here. So it's got to have some permanent damage. It's got to really hurt our credibility around the world as we try to preach that you can debate rather than shoot. And I don't know. It's going to take a lot of repairing. Thank God that we have a president coming in who's probably respected more than almost any other person in the country, because he was head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and he traveled all over the world and met every leader, and they're very respective of him, and I think that'll help regain some American credence. But again, I think we're going to have to – I've never seen anything like it, and we're going to have to sort of ask ourselves, look – if you want to, I've always believed that I got in politics because I wanted to fight the war on poverty. And my feeling was, you've got to start somewhere. If you could create Santa Cruz County, Monterey County, Central Coast, if we could eliminate poverty in these two counties, and we could eliminate racism, and you do that by, you know, providing institutions and programs to do it, it's possible. It's really possible. Just think of other, you could be other countries saying, other counties saying, well, God, if they can do it in that county, can't we do it in L.A. and San Diego? Can't we do it in New York and Chicago? I mean, Santa Cruz particularly has been a small, it's a mouse at large, you know, the first city to oppose the invasion of Iraq. And, I know, hundreds of cities began following the lead. So I think that there's capability of acting locally on international issues, and really demonstrating that you can solve the problems in your local area could be models for other areas. And I think that's what we're going to have to do under the Biden administration.
Thank you, Sam Farr. And I'm going to go to Professor Zunis. You teach Middle Eastern studies. What are the Afghanis, the Iraqis, the Syrians? Are they laughing at America because of our vaunted democracy, and they saw some crumbling and some cracks in the walls yesterday?
Well, it was certainly embarrassing. I mean, seriously, I just take a glimpse at some of the international coverage, and it really is pretty shameful. At the same time, though, I think it must be acknowledged that that presidential administrations and congressional leaders of both parties have long supported autocratic regimes and occupation armies elsewhere in the world. I mean, we're justifiably proud of our democratic institutions and our individual liberties. And of course, the shock and dismay about what happened yesterday is very real and heartfelt. But at the same time, the United States is the world's number one backer of such anti-democratic governments. And you know, my own view is that support for democracy must not stop at the water's edge. If we're serious about defending democratic institutions, we must apply such principles to our foreign policy as well. And so when it comes to places like the Middle East, you know, where, you know, we've heard after 9/11 that the extremists hate us because they hate our freedoms. But unfortunately, most people in that part of the world don't see our freedoms. They see Made in USA on bomb canisters, bomb casings and tear gas canisters. And so, I think in certain ways, certainly those who have traditionally looked up to the Middle East are pretty horrified. But I think on certain levels, there's probably people that are looking at it. We're kind of getting a taste of our own medicine in certain ways. Again, I don't want to downplay the seriousness of what happened. I don't want, and as I said at the outset, the fact that there are significant segments of the Republican Party that have authoritarian tendencies. And I'm not just talking about the people who stormed the Capitol. I'm talking about those people who tried to overturn a democratic election where there was a clear popular majority and a vote majority and a clear electoral vote college majority. I don't want to downplay the seriousness of threats of our democracy here, but at the same time, I think it's important to underscore that we need to be more democratic overseas as well. That's where people respect us or don't respect us. Yes, we want to be a good model, but we also want to be a responsible international actor. And remember, it hasn't been in a not too distant history that the United States was supporting coups and even engineering coups. And so we need to be frank at the about that part of our history, as well as at the same time we fight against the immediate threat here at home.
I'm going to bring Jill Cody back into the conversation. Jill Cody, is Donald Trump toast? A lot of the Republicans are turning against him right now. Is he going to be around, or how do you see him after he leaves on January 20th, if he does leave?
Well, one of the reasons he's fighting the election so seriously is that he's afraid to go to prison when he's not protected by the presidency. And in my view, he's the psychologists call a dark triad personality. Now, many of us have talked a long time about narcissism, malignant narcissism, where, you know, they're constantly fantasizing about power and success and attractiveness. But in a dark triad personality, there's also the psychopathy, where the lack of moral restraint, morals to them are irrelevant. They just, the whole idea of them are unfathomable. But the other part of the triad is Machiavellianism. And the highest priority to them is power, money, and winning at all costs. And they detach themselves from any conventional morality, and they have no qualms about deceiving and manipulating others. And as Mary Trump said, this is the first time that he has found in his life that he can't negotiate, manipulate, bully his way out of a problem when his back is to the wall. And he's fighting desperately and manipulating these people, our neighbors, to storm the Capitol building because he, at all costs, cannot see himself as losing. He's got to stay in power. And also his father said, there are only winners and losers. I mean, there are only losers or killers. And you've got to be a killer. So there are
losers
and killers. There you go.
Mm-hmm. We're already halfway through the show, and I am with former Congressmember Sam Farr, Professor Stephen Zunis, and author Jill Cote, and we'll return in a Santa Cruz second. This is KSQD Santa Cruz 90.7. Okay, we're back.
Creative Bandwidth.
Go ahead.
Creative Bandwidth is a deep dive into the stories behind the story of some of the best music ever made. Join me, Eric Nelson, every Saturday at 12 p.m. for a two-hour journey into the dark and the light sides of some legendary performers, featuring some of their rarest and greatest performances. From rock to jazz to country to soul to the blues, Creative Bandwidth contains multitudes. You'll never listen to your favorite tunes the same way again. Only on KSQD 90.7, many voices, one station.
Welcome back. This is Chris Krohn for KSQD. This is not just talk of the Bay today. This is talk of Washington, D.C. and of the world. And we have others joining us, but I want to go to former Representative Sam Farr first. And you brought up Joe Biden, Congressmember, and I'm just wondering, how do you see the situation in the United States government changing with a Joe Biden administration?
Well, first of all, you probably have the most experienced person ever elected to the presidency of the United States on a global basis and on a domestic basis for all the years. Remember, he was the youngest person ever sworn into the Senate. He got elected before he was eligible, but by the time he was sworn in, and he'd had his birthday to make him eligible, so he's 30 years old, and he's been in that. And he's just knowledgeable. He's appointing, you know, incredibly well-qualified people around him in a diversified cabinet. And I think he gives a lot of hope to the people that he can really pull this government back together and have a government of respect. But it's going to, you know, as much as I hated Donald Trump and just never thought he could ever get elected. I mean, when I went, I was interesting. I bet my Republican colleagues $1,000 that Trump would be elected, you know, by them. And nobody would take the bet. Because they said nobody's going to, even in their own party, they just said nobody's going to elect this guy. But they did. And I think we have to realize that all his power is derived from the people that got him in office. And they're still out there. And some of them still believe that he's the Messiah. we have got to change that. It's not going to be changed. You know, leadership in the Republican Party is going to have to start being coming forth and really relating to debating issues on facts rather than myth and providing leadership based on facts. I think we're going to be in some uncertain terms, but I think that the engine of government is going to run much more smoothly with a lot more credibility under Joe Biden.
Thank you, Representative Farr. Well, I'm going to bring two other guests in here. Rachel Ann Goodman is an award-winning radio journalist and one of the founders of KSQD. She usually hosts Talk Good Today on Thursdays, and she also teaches journalism at Cabrillo College and UCSC. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you for holding down my time slot while I'm out of town and for doing such a great job pulling together this erudite crew, talking about what happened yesterday and still analyzing it and reeling from it and talking about it with my students.
I want to get in. Ronnie Lipschitz is professor of politics at UCSC, and his most recent book is The Constitution of Imperium. Ronnie also hosts a program, Sustainability Now, and is focused on environmental issues. I want to start off with Rachel. Can you give us a sense of what you saw yesterday, and what does it mean for not only for the country, but for Santa Cruz?
I think it means we have a problem that's not going to go away just because these people were ejected temporarily from the Capitol. I think we have a problem with people getting in media bubbles where they believe falsely. And that problem has to do with people feeling disaffected and disconnected from the political system and finding common cause for their grievances online with other people who believe the same thing, whatever that thing is. So we kind of have to reckon with the place we've come to with social media, and I see this as a media professor as well as someone who's sometimes on Facebook looking around at what people are saying. So I think, you know, there's an accounting to be done in a lot of ways, but immediately just reading stories about how few people were arrested, there's something wrong with what happened. And 64 arrests, this is domestic terrorism. I think the FBI was dismantled or something before this happened because they would have been taking names and putting people right down on the floor in handcuffs, and they didn't.
Okay, I'm going to go to Ronnie Lipschitz, professor of politics. You teach this stuff. How do you teach that moment yesterday, and where does it come into, like, your sort of historical index of Santa Cruz, of United States big political events?
You know, Chris, I've retired. I'm not teaching this stuff anymore, thank God, because I don't know how I would explain it. But, you know, one of the things I want to say, and no offense to Representative Farr, but what I've heard is a lot of American exceptionalism in this discussion, you know. And in my view, that there's a psychopathology at the heart of the American state. And you know, I blame this partly on the nation state and combined with democracy. I talked about this on Jill's show a few weeks ago, and it just seems to me that we're really focused on what happened yesterday. Stephen mentioned, of course, that this is not necessarily new, and the presidency is this kind of is this office. Which, how do I put this? You know, nobody who runs for the president for the presidency is qualified for the office because they think they can do the job, and yet we raise these people to this sort of status of almost a godhead, and you know, gods can do some very nasty things if they decide to. We rely on people in the office to be civil and to observe norms and not to exercise the potential power of the office to levels that, you know, rise to what happened, you know, what Donald Trump has been doing. And yet it's been there. And we've seen other presidents who have, you know, exceeded what was considered to be normative and civil. They just haven't been quite the same kind of person. And I shudder to think that if Donald Trump could have held a pen and might have been, you know, a little bit more thoughtful and rational, we would really be in deep trouble. I mean, much deeper than what we've seen.
And Professor Zunis, what's your take on what Ronnie was just saying, and then also what Sam Farr said about our neighbors were climbing fences yesterday? Was that something that you saw, and do you see Biden taking us back to normality?
Well, unfortunately, normality was part of what got us into this problem, because normality helped create the enormous income inequality we have in the United States, which is the worst in the advanced industrialized world. And when you have when we don't have a social democratic party, when we don't have a party that really is serious about addressing the root causes of this, when we have basically a battle between a centrist party and a right wing party, and the right wing party takes on this pseudo populist kind of attitude, oh, we're for the little guy, you know, that you have phenomenon like Trumpism, and that's when the only really way to fight populism on the right is a populism of the left. And we had some of that in with Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and other people, and members of and the Progressive Caucus, which Sam Farr was to his credit was a member of, who are more interested in looking at these issues. I mean, Sam did an amazing job, you know, within the limitations of Washington, of looking at the issues of poverty and inequality. But unfortunately, Biden is very much from the centrist wing of the party. I mean, he's a decent fellow. I mean, he really is. But he falls into, I'm afraid, this more neoliberal camp. And on foreign policy, I've clashed with him for years, particularly his role as head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and pushing the Iraq War resolution through and limiting hearings to only a day and a half and not allowing Middle East scholars to testify and just stacking the witness list with war supporters. I mean, a lot of us are still bitter with him about that. But at the same time, I think what we're seeing in the United States is, with the Black Lives Matter movement and other social justice movements, we're seeing an unprecedented rise of a progressive populism that I think that Biden will have to listen to, and I think he realizes on some level we can't just go back to the status quo ante. We do need to address some of these underlying problems, but I think what's important is that, in addition to fighting this immediate threat of the far right that is threatening our democratic institutions, we need to also struggle against the kind of the neoliberalism and the militarism that unfortunately many people in the Democratic Party embrace, and really really push through nonviolent means for the more substantive changes that are so desperately needed, and the failure to address them, I believe, is directly responsible for the rise of Trumpism.
I'm going to go to Jill Cody. Jill Cody, what do you see as the new normal once a Biden presidency takes over?
Well, I think it's been said that we don't want to go back to normal. We want to go back to better. We want to function better as a society. And I don't know how we're going to do that until we elect more serious people. I mean, Trump is election is just abhorrent, and he's the opposite of a serious person. And the 100 people that were representatives that voted against democracy and wanting to overturn the Electoral College, they're not serious people. They're obviously just following a theology or ideology. And so that's one of the problems we have. And another thing is that we have different media sources. We are divided. I mean, Fox News has no interest in democracy. It wasn't set up to be a news source. It was set up to be a Republican propaganda channel. And they don't even have a standards and ethics department, unlike serious journalism does NBC, ABC, and New York Times. So they're not interested, and yet they're with the largest news network being watched. So the propaganda, I just don't know how we can get to a better normal, a more functioning society without addressing the misinformation and the lies that are told to people, then they really believe that they're real. So we need to do something about, I think, media, and I'm sure Rachel has much more to say about that. And we need to have people electing more serious and take it more seriously of who they're sending to Congress. We can't have more Josh Hawleys.
Representative Farr, has Congress moved to the left from, you were there from 93 to 2017. Has Congress moved more to the left, or is it just more polarized?
No, it's much more left. I mean, the Progressive Caucus is the largest caucus in Congress, in either house. Largest caucus. So, but, you know, you have to be in the, you can be a large caucus within a minority party. And my prediction is that Biden will be a much more progressive and president than Obama, because you've elected a team to support him that is a majority in both houses, a thin majority in both houses, but nevertheless to support him. And he's got a cabinet that is probably more seasoned and been able to accomplish things that need to be done. First of all, they've got to figure out all the mess that Trump has done with all his executive orders and stuff. And I think they'll do it right away. You can undo a previous president's executive orders by a new president's executive orders. But I think if we give him a chance,
what can we expect in terms
of Congress and the Senate that can back him, that we will have a very uniting, because I think the country's been more progressive. Look at these southern states that are now turning to blue, and look at how we are. I mean, the Central Coast, you've got incredible elected officials who are accomplishing at each of their levels, local level, state level, federal level. They're accomplishing great things. And I think more of the nation's going to be looking at California and California's ability to respond to these big critical issues.
Can I stop you there for a second? The progressives are feeling like they're not getting their people in the Biden administration. We didn't get a Bernie Sanders for labor secretary. We didn't get a Elizabeth Warren for treasury secretary. We didn't get a Barbara Lee. The only person we got was Deb Haaland from in the Interior Department.
Don't worry about those administrators. They're administrators. You know, the initiative is going to come out of Congress, and all the people you've just mentioned are still in Congress. Don't you think that Bernie Sanders and Barbara Lee, my good friend Barbara Lee, and others are going to be pushing their agendas, and they're now going to have some support to do it? I think you guys are getting too critical. We got so much repair to do, and we're going to have to start listening rather than just blaming, and we're going to have to figure out how do you co-opt the Trumpsters. We've got to get them back into our community, back into the mainstream of governance. We can argue politically, you know, left and right, but as long as you're having a large proportion of a society that won't even buy in to a common sense, to a community and a nation that's based on the rule of law and on facts, making the rule of law based on facts, we're in serious condition, and we've got to do that repair locally, because that can't come out of Washington.
Rachel Ann Goodman, does journalism, you teach journalism, and what role does it play? This our society is so divided right now and so polarized. How do we get people talking more to each other, as really Sam Farr is talking about?
Well, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
I think we need to take a step back into the moment we're still in, and we can talk about journalism because that's part of the equation. Journalists were attacked by this rabble mob yesterday. They were harmed. Their equipment was trashed. There was a whole van that was taken. So we need to talk about the vilification of journalists and what a threat that is to our democracy. But I wanted to circle back around to what I've been hearing some, and I've heard different tones, and Sam Farr is striking a pretty conciliatory tone. But these are terrorists. These are people who had pipe bombs. They had, Molotov cocktails. This isn't someone who's your neighbor. Like, if your neighbor is making a Molotov cocktail, you got a problem with your neighbor. We don't need to go to them, as one congressman from Michigan on television said yesterday. They have a lot of accounting to do, and we don't negotiate with terrorists, and these are domestic terrorists. And if we treat them as such, we're not going to go pandering to them and begging their forgiveness for not listening to them enough. What we heard yesterday was loud and clear. They want to take down our democracy and put one guy in office against the will of the public. So that reckoning needs to happen in the court of law. I'm sorry, but this sort of, we all need to get along. Yeah, but there's a group of them we're not going to get along with. We're not going to agree with, because we don't agree with violence. So we need to get clear on that and stop parsing it as if they're just some crazy neighbor of ours. There is a small proportion of people who are willing to do violence, but with enough incitement, there's more of them, I fear. And we're still 14 days away from the inauguration, which could also be disrupted. So I would like to hear more of accountability of how come they didn't arrest more people. Where are the names? They let them out of the building. They literally let them leave without arresting them. Now they have to go track down who that was on the video in Nancy Pelosi's office. So there was something seriously wrong with what happened beyond, you know, the violence. It was the allowance of them to get in and leave the building without repercussion. As far as the media goes, well, Jill mentioned Fox News, and there's now, you know, a contender on the right for Fox, if you can believe that. I don't know what you do. I think you do a lot of media literacy training about what is and is not journalism. What's advocacy and what's propaganda? And you started in like the fifth grade. That's what I would do.
Professor Ronnie Lipschitz, you're sort of practicing journalism right now with your Sustainability Now show. Did I just hear somebody's voice?
Yeah, you heard me, Sam Farr. And I wanted to say I agree with everybody does violent acts needs to be held accountable for that. I don't do that. What I've always found is that you're always going to have an ugly dissonant, but keep them in the minority. And you do that by really having a well-educated majority. And I think we have a lot of work to do to make sure that our well-educated majority steps up. And, you know, we've all gotten wonderful educations in this great state, and the purpose of a public education or of education is to grow well-informed, independent thinkers. And I don't think we have done a very good job of doing that universally.
Sam, I have a question for you real quick, if you don't mind. What can Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer do about these senators who inside the building were fomenting the same false narrative that was inciting violence? Aren't they culpable for what happened? And what do we do about them?
Well, good question. Each house is responsible for the ability to expel members of their house. And it doesn't have to be, frankly, done on any like trial basis. You can, we expelled a member who had committed felonies, was still sitting in Congress. He had a jail sentence, but as long as he was in Congress, he didn't have to go. Well, we expelled him. And, it's a tough thing to do, but they have the authority within their own rules to expel members or to censor them. And the majority, the Democrats are in the majority, so certainly as appointments to committees and things like that, there's actions they can take. But I really fault Kevin McCarthy. I mean, he's a Californian. He represents the same state that Nancy Pelosi represents, and how we allow our own state representative from Bakersfield, who represents one of the poorest districts in the United States. The demographics in Bakersfield are worse than that of Mississippi, and he's one of the most powerful members in Congress, doesn't do a damn thing to help his district, and is not doing anything to provide any leadership on this issue. So I think, you know, the California literature press in California ought to start holding our own Republican Congress members accountable for their responsibilities.
So, Professor Lipschitz, you want to weigh in on the violence that took place in the Capitol yesterday and what you think should happen, that these people are terrorists? Ronnie, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Now, I want to make a remark about the idea that educating people is somehow going to be the solution. I'm being very cynical, but 30 years as an educator convinces me that that may not be the case, that people have very deep-seated beliefs and they hold on to them, and they're not very easily willing to give them up, you know, facts or not, that this is really the crisis. Is when we frame this as as facts and falsehoods. But I'm not convinced that facts are going to, and education are the solution. And I mean, I'll go back to what we saw yesterday, you know, is an expression of a very small group, but there are hundreds of millions of guns out there in the United States. And I'm not at all convinced that we're out of the woods. I think it's a, you know, one incident that, is likely to be replicated. I'm done.
Professor Zunis, same question. What about the terrorism that took place? Where are we headed as a country?
Well, I don't fear that there will be a fascist takeover of the United States or a successful right-wing coup. I really have faith that there are enough Americans who really believe in representative democracy and freedom, you know, not just liberals and leftists, but I think there are a lot of honest conservatives who were genuinely appalled by what happened yesterday as well. But it does raise fear that we do have a lot of this growing far right movement that is heavily armed, and I really do think there is a serious risk of a far right wing terrorism on a scale we haven't seen before. I think we can see actually we already are seeing this to some degree, not just the big one, Oklahoma City, back in the late 1990s, but the vast majority of terrorist incidents in the United States are from the far right. Under the Trump administration, they basically got rid of the office that was investigating far right violence, and insisted they look exclusively on so-called Islamic terrorism. But I think under Biden, at least, I think they will take all terrorist threats seriously and will recognize that this is the big one right now. But I really do think we have to prepare ourselves for the prospects that there can be, there may be a fair amount of the political violence from the extreme right. And it's far so dangerous here, given how lax our gun laws are. We are very, very vulnerable to this sort of thing.
Okay, we're winding it down here. This is KSQD. I'm Chris Krohn. My guests are Jill Cody, Stephen Zunis, Sam Farr, Rachel Ann Goodman, and Ronnie Lipschitz. And it's getting tighter and tighter inside this radio. What about, we're just going to go around really quickly. We'll start with Jill Cody, and we're just going to go down. Jill Cody, Stephen Zunis, Sam Farr, Rachel Ann Goodman, and then Ronnie Lipschitz. Closing comments about where we're at as a society and where we need to go. Jill Cody first. 30 seconds.
Well, one thing is that I think we need to take as many of the domestic terrorists and off the chessboard. They just need to be taken out of society and dealt with criminally. Also, we have to shine light on as a disinfectant. For example, I just saw a video that Don Jr. sent out to his followers. Were in the bunker of the White House last night. He and his friends were partying with screens, TV screens, watching the insurrection. Donald Trump was there too. And at the end, Karen Guilfoyle's going, fight, fight, this is a party, and they were joyous over what was happening at the Capitol. That video needs to be seen by the public.
Stephen Zunis, 30 seconds.
Very serious crossroads at in our history right now. But the good news, I think what happened yesterday is going to backfire. I think a lot of people are closing ranks about the importance of democracy. I think the symbolic meaning of the U.S. Capitol for so many Americans as the seat of government these nearly 250 years is such that I think there's something good can come out of this, as upsetting and scary as it might be.
Thank you. Sam Farr.
Well, in 14 days, we have a new president. Trump loses the microphone. All the Trumpsters lose their microphone. We hope that the media doesn't keep covering them. They drop off. That we don't hear from them. And then give peace a chance. Give this new administration a chance. Don't criticize it because of something they voted in the past. Look, they're really talented, and you got a talented Congress. And they can put this stuff back together, but they need the support of the people. They can't lead unless people will follow. So let's give them a chance and try to follow their lead.
Thank you, Rachel Ann Goodman.
I'm happy a Jew and a Black person from Georgia won an election just 2 days ago. That's exciting to me.
Yeah.
And secondly, accountability. They need to go after every single one of the people who broke into the Capitol and prosecute them to the fullest extent of the law. They need to show the conspiracy that this was. And who's accountable for it is Donald Trump and his supporters and enablers. They all need to reckon with what they did in a legal way. And finally, accountability from the social media platforms. Twitter banned him for 12 hours. That's not enough. He needs to be off of there because he's causing danger. And that's my final thoughts.
Professor
Thank
Ronnie
you for
Lipschitz,
letting me
Sure, you get the last comment, Ronnie.
Yeah, amen. I urge everybody to go out and read about the Weimar Republic. The real question is this the beer hall push, or our Reichstag fire? You know, that's history can tell us a few things. That's my last comment.
Thank you very much. I want to thank all of our guests. We had an incredible, for me, conversation here. Jill Cody, author of Be Bold, she hosts a show, Be Bold America on KSQD, and author of Climate Abandon. Stephen Zunis, the professor of politics at the University of San Francisco. He lectures widely on Middle East policy. Sam Farr, thank you, Sam, a retired Congress member representing Santa Cruz and Monterey County all those years, the good peace guy. Rachel Ann Goodman, a journalist teaches journalism at Cabrillo College and UCSC. And Ronnie Lipschitz is a retired professor of politics from UCSC and also hosts a show here, Sustainability Now. Thank you all. And this is KSQD. My name is Chris Krohn, and this is Talk of the Bay.